Daniel, or at least half of the book of Daniel, I think is really well known. I think it's a favorite. We teach it to kids, and there's a lot of good stuff in the life of this man, Daniel. But because it's so well known, because it's such a good kids' Bible class book, again, the first half of it, second half is a little confusing for those classes. We'll talk about that some today. Because it's so familiar, sometimes we miss some of what's going on. Daniel has a lot to do with what we've talked about the last few weeks. Daniel is a book in exile. Daniel is about individuals, Israelite individuals, who are not anywhere near Israel. And it spans a good amount of time in there. We start off with Daniel and some others being taken away by Babylonians. We heard about that. We've talked about that, right? We're familiar with Babylonian exile and the devastation caused by that. But Daniel and his three friends that went by different names than what we think of as their names. This goes along part of with what was going on with exile. They were taken to Babylon, and they said, "You guys look like you have something that could be of benefit to the Babylonians. So we're going to turn you into good Babylonians." And the first thing they did was change their names. And so they said, "Daniel, we're going to call you Belteshazzar. And your friends Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah," ever hear of those guys? Doesn't sound familiar, but they said, "We're going to call you Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego." We stuck with the name Daniel. We usually stick with the name Daniel instead of Belteshazzar. But the names that we know those other three guys by weren't their names. They were given to them by Babylonians who wanted to turn them into good Babylonians instead of, being wasted and being loyal to being Israelite and everything that goes along with that. So they start off as Babylonian captives, and Daniel gains respect there. And by the end of the first half of Daniel, the Babylonians are gone. That doesn't mean it's really good news. Daniel is still a captive in a foreign land. It's just that it's the Persians, the Medes and the Persians. It's still exile. He's still not home. Daniel never, as we see in the book, at least as we're told in the book, Daniel never gets to go home. He's in exile for the rest of his life. It goes from Babylonian to Persian. It's still exile. And when you get into that second half of the book, it talks about the end of Persian control, which really just means the Greeks are coming in and taking over. The Greeks are going to defeat the Persian Empire. And not only is that not better, it ends up being worse. It talks about some of the actions of Antiochus Epiphanes, which we will not have time this morning to talk about, but it wasn't a good thing. This was someone who came in and to the temple and, to be fair, like everybody else we've seen throughout the studying of history, took all the good stuff out of the temple, but he sacrificed a pig on the main altar, unclean animal. He was not just making them submissive, but insulting and but like I said, that's another day. We're not going to get into Antiochus this morning. We're talking about Daniel, right? Daniel is a case study of a life in exile, taken away from his home. And even when we talk about the captors being overtaken, it just means a new look of exile. And so Daniel has a lot to do with what we've been talking about the last few weeks, when we were looking in Kings and Chronicles and looking in Revelation, these times of crisis. So let's look at Daniel. Daniel, as a book of exile and as a figure of exile, was a very popular figure, not just when we fast forward to Christian Bible classes. He was very popular for Jews at the time. When they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, and you know they're counting up how many of each book they're finding, they found a lot of Daniel, and a lot of, for lack of a better term, commentary written on Daniel. Because this was 1st and 2nd century B.C. This was during the time of the Greek Empire. They could identify with Daniel. They could see themselves in Daniel's story. And so they can try to learn from Daniel how they're supposed to act. And I think when we look at Daniel, we start to see some familiar traits. We start to see maybe some familiar faces when we look at Daniel. This is why I wasn't going to do slides, because I want us to maybe use our imaginations a little bit. At one point, I was writing this down, I almost went with the close your eyes and think that I remembered that's a bad plan from the pulpit. Never encourage the closing of the eyes. Just asking for trouble. So imagine with your eyes open. Think of Daniel's story. Start with the most famous Daniel scene. Daniel with the lions. Or Daniel's friends in the fiery furnace. Daniel facing down dangerous situations, knowing that he had nothing to worry about because God was with him. If you think about it real hard, if you focus on him, again, eyes open, Daniel kind of looks like David, doesn't he? Daniel, standing in front of those lions, looks an awful lot like David standing in front of that giant, right? We tell those stories together a lot. Right? We tell Daniel and the lions, Rakshak and Beni and the fiery furnace, David and Goliath. We kind of see young David when we look at Daniel here, I think. We see that boldness. We see that willingness to not run from the danger, but to stand tall, realizing that you do not stand alone. There's a song that I did out at camp this summer when I was doing a Bible class that I've done it some other times that I stole the title of this sermon from, called Run If You Want To. And it's this song that brings up some of these stories of God's people in a position where they had every right to be afraid and to run. And the chorus goes, run if you want to, run if you will, I came here to stay. When I fall down, I got to get up, because I didn't start off that way. That sounds a little silly. It's a battlefield, brother, not a recreation room. It's a fight and not a game. So run if you want to, and run if you will, but I came here to stay. And you sing about David in front of the giant. And you sing about Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego in the furnace. You sing about Daniel in front of those lions. He said, you can run. I get it. It's scary. It's a battlefield. It's a fight. And I understand why you want to run. I'm not going to do it. I came here to stay. Think about the message that sends to an audience in exile. Daniel, in a very real sense, like we said, was there to stay. He was taken from his home and he never got to go back. Daniel, like David, knew that even if he wasn't going to return home, and even if he had to stay in these situations, he was not staying alone. He didn't have to go back home to find the God of Israel. He knew his God stood with him, no matter where he was, no matter what happened. And so I see David in Daniel. Do you see it? Let's go to the next most popular picture of Daniel. You see Daniel being called into an audience with the king. Nebuchadnezzar one time, Darius another time. The king has had a dream. The king is troubled and wants to know what this dream means. And there is Daniel. He said, Daniel, can you interpret dreams? And what does Daniel say? No, I can't. But God can. Does this sound like anybody to you? Does this look like somebody you're familiar with? You know, to me, Daniel kind of looks like Joseph. He does, doesn't he? Remember Joseph? Foreign land. Sold by his brothers, thrown in jail. People start having dreams. Pharaoh has a dream. Find me someone that can interpret this dream. And the cupbearer says, I know this guy in jail. He interprets dreams. Bring him here. He can do it. And Pharaoh says, Joseph, you can interpret dreams? And Joseph says what? No, I can't. But God can, and sometimes God uses me. And Joseph gives the interpretation to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh recognizes something within Joseph and makes him, second in command of Egypt, right? Leads to that whole story, leads to the deliverance of God's people, even if it was just a family at that time. Daniel kind of looks like Joseph, standing in front of that foreign king, far from home, given an opportunity to brag about something that he can do. He's already been pointed out as this is somebody that can do some pretty amazing things. He could have said, yeah, I can do that. Let me show you how this is done. But he recognizes we need God to do any of these great things. And do you remember what it said? In Daniel chapter 6, when those other leaders and advisors wanted to get rid of Daniel, do you remember what King Darius was preparing to do for Daniel? In Daniel 6:3, it said, now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps, by his exceptional qualities, the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Looks like Joseph, doesn't he? He interprets dreams. He doesn't pull punches, even when in front of some of the most powerful people in the world. He's being recognized for his quality and being set in a place of honor. And that doesn't always work out well for Daniel. But he looks like Joseph. Joseph had it hard. Daniel had it hard. But what was that repeated line back in Genesis about Joseph? Every time something bad happened to Joseph, remember Daniel got thrown into the well? Daniel got thrown into jail? Do you remember where that repeated line was in Genesis? But the Lord was with Joseph. And we see the same thing in Daniel. And there is maybe
Maybe my favorite verse in Daniel, when those administrators and satraps were trying to get rid of him, it said, they tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Good personal qualities, kind of sounding like Joseph. Finally, these men said, we will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God. That's what we see in Daniel. His actions and what he does are so grounded in the laws of God, in what God expects. They use that against him. We already talked about the lions. They use that against him. And yet we look at that and see it as something heroic, standing up in the midst of trouble, in the midst of danger. So he looks like Joseph, I think. We look at him once and he looks like David. We look at him again, he looks like Joseph. Now let's turn to the back half of the book. There's a reason we don't do that in the kids' classes. It's a very different collection of material. Did anybody take the time this week? This is on the reading. Anybody take the chance to read the back half of Daniel? You don't have to read it. I believe you all did. I believe in you. Who does Daniel look like in chapters 7 through 12? Well, if you're asking me, and a couple people have mentioned some things in class on Wednesday, and most people that have read this book, Daniel in the second half of it looks a lot like John from Revelation. The first half of the book is narrative. It's these stories that we say looks like Dan, looks like David, looks like Joseph. The back half of the book, it looks like Revelation. Part of that is because the author of Revelation was drawing a lot from Daniel. But when you see things like, in my vision at night I looked, and there before me were the four winds of heaven churning up the great sea. Four great beasts, each different from the others, came up out of the sea. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. This sounds like Revelation. This is apocalyptic literature. Maybe a little early stages of apocalyptic literature. And he's not the only one that does it. Daniel and John are not the only apocalyptic writers. And we could say, well, this looks like Zechariah, or this looks like parts of Ezekiel, but we don't recognize those two as clearly as we recognize John, right? So when we look at Daniel, we see John the Revelator. And what did we say the purpose of Revelation was? You remember that from a couple weeks ago? What's John doing? He's writing to a community in crisis, especially faith crisis. We said 2 weeks ago that apocalyptic literature addresses crisis. It makes people who said, my faith tells me one thing and what I see in the world looks like another thing, and they have that dissonance between those two things. Apocalyptic writing says, don't abandon your faith, reinterpret your world. Right? Hopefully that sounds somewhat familiar. So we said, it's writing for faith crisis. Then last week, we talked about exile, and we said, the biggest thing about exile wasn't about destruction or loss of land or houses, it's about faith crisis. Right? These are people that say, we are taken out of our land, there's not a king in the line of David on the throne. Those promises of the covenant seem to be gone. Does the part of the covenant that said God's love will never be taken away, has that part ended as well?
So, 2 weeks ago, apocalyptic literature is about faith crises. Last week, the exile is about faith crisis. Well, Daniel is apocalyptic literature at the time of exile. It's doing the same thing Revelation is doing at a different time. It is written for these people to try to reinterpret the world around them, to show them the truth. He looks a lot like John. And whether there's disagreement about if this was written at the time of Babylonian and Persian exile with a looking forward to the Greek exile to come, or if this was written at the time of Greek control and looking back at all the events leading up. This is one of those things that people will argue about and get very heated, but it's also one of those things, like we've talked about some at other times, where once they're done arguing and disagreeing, you say, but wait, you both think it means it's the same thing, right? Like, yeah, it means the same thing. So let's not worry about when it was written, but it is talking about this community experiencing these various exiles, and just like John was doing in Revelation, it was peeling back the curtain. It's giving this peek, this little glimpse at the bigger things that God is doing. And Daniel is seeing these things, and I got to give some credit. Rachel pointed out something that I hadn't quite caught, and it goes back to maybe what Daniel was saying. Remember Daniel said he doesn't know how to interpret dreams? Daniel has visions, and he keeps going to other people to interpret them. I hadn't picked up on that, but Daniel has these visions, and other people are interpreting them. That's not real important. But he's being shown, this is what's happening in the world. This is what's happening with the Babylonians and the Persians and the Greeks. And then it goes all the way to the end. And in chapter 12, we've seen all of these things. He's seen the all these strange things with the creatures and the ram and the goat. And, you know, he's Persia and he's Greece and all those things. He's given the scroll of the end. It says, roll it up, seal it up, and take it, Daniel. We don't get to see the end in Daniel, but it's given to Daniel. And here's how the book ends. Daniel chapter 12, verse 8. I heard, but I did not understand. I think Mike said something about that in class this morning. Yeah. Maybe he was talking about something different. Yeah, all this stuff. I heard, but I did not understand. So I asked, my Lord, what will the outcome of all this be? He replied, go your way, Daniel, because the words are closed up and sealed until the end of time, until the time of the end. Many will be purified, made spotless, and refined, but the wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand, but those who are wise will understand. From the time the daily sacrifice is abolished, and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. Blessed is the one who waits and reaches to the end of the 1,335 days. Don't ask me, I don't know. As for you, go your way until the end. You will rest. And then at the end of the days, you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance. In the end, after all of these visions, after all of these big picture things, these glimpses into the actions and the mind of God, said, ultimately, you're not going to understand some things. Some things
have to be revealed later. Go your own way. Daniel, you keep doing what you're doing. Daniel, stay. You came here to stay, like we said before. At the end of the book, it said there's only so much that we can know, but we do know what really matters. In the book of Daniel, I think he looks like David. And I think he looks like Joseph. And I think he looks like John. But ultimately, I don't think anything in the book of Daniel about what Daniel really looks like really matters all that much. I think when we look at Daniel, we are meant to look at ourselves and figure out who do we look like, especially in these times of crisis. I suspect none of us are ever going to face down exile. But I also suspect that we understand faith crisis. That we understand feeling overwhelmed in the face of a challenge. Are you going to look like Daniel? Are you going to look like David? We understand seeking wisdom and needing to act faithfully and honorably in the face of a world that may not do the same. We understand feeling alone in that way. And in that time, who do you look like? Do you look like Daniel? Do you look like Joseph? We understand desperately trying to find a word to say to someone else going through crisis. We understand when there's someone who needs a word of comfort, even when we don't fully understand what's going on in those times. Can you draw upon the strength of the Lord in understanding? And do you look like Daniel? Do you look like John? Do you look like Jesus? It's a blessing to have these examples. The book of Daniel is a blessing. It's unique, I believe, among the books of the Bible, the way it shows life of exile. And all the examples that I do believe the book of Daniel is drawing from, these are blessings to have. And when we turn to the New Testament, we look at the life of Jesus and the life of his apostles and all the lives that he touched and those who stood up for Jesus and carried the message on. It's a blessing to have those examples. But it's only a blessing if we learn from them. Only if we let them affect the way that we react. Daniel is a book of living in a very messed up time. It's living in a time that requires this resolving of the faith crisis. I think we can learn from that. I think that if we draw from these examples and we see within ourselves what we can be, we do find better ways of living our life. We find better ways of navigating all of that messiness. And maybe somebody can look at us and say, you look like Daniel. You kind of look like Joseph. You look like Jesus. That's my prayer, that we can all find ourselves in that place. That's our message this morning. What do you look like? If there's anything you need, let us know. Finding yourself in time of crisis, it's better to be around other faithful people. Better to be around family. If there's anything you need this morning, please let us know. come forward as we stand and sing.
God is calling the prodigal come without delay.